History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Alrighty, we welcome you aboard, one and all, on a Friday in the nation's capital. Good to have you with us. We're with you until 4 live on your radio, on the Team 980 throughout the DMV, and anywhere you go with the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn apps if you're listening live. If you're listening on demand, either way, we appreciate you. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and of course, Odyssey, every hour, every show. Every day, every segment, and every bit of dribble that we talk about. Coming up later on in the show, you will hear two player interviews from after yesterday's practice out at Command Land. Charles Amenihu, new defensive lineman from the Kansas City Chiefs, and as well, new cornerback Amik Robertson. Caught up with both guys for quick one-on-ones, like 4 minutes-ish. I think you're going to like both guys. We had Ben Sinnott, that interview yesterday. We had Sam Cosmi and Akella Weatherspoon on Wednesday. So we're off and running in terms of that and that content with training camp open. Today, there was no access. The team had like basically a walkthrough slash light practice, what have you. Tomorrow morning, of course, fans allowed for the first time, 8:30 in the morning. I think that's season ticket holders, but I'm not 100% sure how they're doing all that. I'll let others worry about that. You know, if you can go, you got to have a ticket, and away we go. I know there'll be fans there. That's what I know. And I'll be there. And we'll hopefully get a little bit better of an idea of where this offense is at through, granted, just a couple of days of work. But I wanted to start with this. Man, last night sucked. I was so hopeful early on when the Nationals were just torching balls out of Truist Park. I was like, okay. Hello, Luis Garcia. Hello. Right? Dalen Lyle. Hello. You started to think, oh, okay. This is the offense that I love. And Jake Irvin was back on the bump. And Jake Irvin was dealing pitch count-wise and efficiency-wise, even though Atlanta was hitting some rockets. If you watch the first two innings of that game, almost everything on both sides was rocket shot, rocket shot, rocket shot. Now, listen, that happens often with heat and humidity, right? You would think humidity cuts down the way balls jump. It doesn't work that way here. It certainly was not working that way last night in Atlanta. I don't know how humid it was, but it's Atlanta at the end of July. Okay, it's not a dry heat, but the ball was jumping. And you kind of knew early on that this was going to be a hard, hard night to get a lot of good pitching, and you better have the offense to support it. Right? And even though, again, Jake Irvin was pretty good, despite getting some deep, deep, deep fly balls, some rocket shots in the first couple of innings, he was pretty good efficiency-wise. I think he had, like, into the fifth inning, like 50-some-odd pitches, which is crazy. And the Nationals had a 3-0 lead. They had solo runs in the second, the third, the fourth. Again, home run, home run, home run. Lyle hit a rocket shot. Garcia hit one that's traveling still to Alpharetta. And then Lyle hit his 13th. And you're like, okay, the ball's jumping. The Nats bats are alive. Yes, they were three home runs. Unfortunately, they were three solo home runs, but still. And then it all collapsed. Acuña hit a home run, right? And that shouldn't really surprise anybody. To get kind of the Braves going. But then, and I know Acuña's only got eight home runs this year. He's missed a lot of time because of injury, but you know how good that guy is. Then, in the fifth inning, and again, I think Ravitch on ESPN, Carl Ravitch on ESPN, because it was only a national call last night on the TV side. So, like, Colco and Franzen and Alexa Datt were off on Nationals TV. Before Mike Yastrzemski hits the two-run bomb, he's like, oh, you know, Irvin, and I forget the exact pitch count at that point, is like, you know, very efficient, only 50, you know, what's some odd pitches. And then the next thing you know, there's a low sinking line drive to right field, and James Wood, after being so comfortable and confident out in right field early on in the game, so much so that he was doing a damn live interview on a live mic and got back-to-back opportunities, one against the fence, and that wasn't the only time that he was up against the warning track of the fence. It was several times. And then once he had to come on, kind of come in for, but back-to-back outs while he was doing a live interview. That's how cool, calm, and collected he was. Until Mike Yastrzemski hit a sinking line drive that James Wood got a little bit of a late jump on. So he didn't either read it right or just, I don't know what happened. And then he makes an errant throw into the area between first base and, I guess, home plate, past the first baseman on the throw. And that allows, basically, Dominic Smith to advance to, I think it was second. Right? And with two out, then Yastrzemski comes up. And maybe if he catches that, again, the inning's over, Yastrzemski comes up and hits a rocket shot. Right? So now, all of a sudden, instead of it being a 3-1 game still, it's a 3-3 game. Mistakes happen, but he made two mistakes, essentially two judgment errors, or one physical error and one judgment error on the same play. And again, tied up the game. And then you're watching and you're like, oh man, Carson Palmquist hasn't been very good, has he? He's on the bump after they pull Jake Irvin. And again, his final line scores, five earned runs in five innings, probably not indicative of the entire night, if we're being honest, but it is what it is. And it's not like they didn't hit him hard. They hit him hard from the jump. He was just efficient. He was getting quick outs. But then Ozzie Albies hits a two-run single off of Palmquist, who gets immediately in trouble, on what looked to be a hell of a pitch that Albies just went out and got. I can't kill Palmquist for the pitch. And all of a sudden, the Braves are up 5-3. And now the Nationals need some runs. Now, they get an RBI triple from Luis Garcia. But they come up short the rest of the way. Runners in scoring position on the night. They were 0-9. Runners left in scoring position with two out. C.J. Abrams left four of them. Dylan Cruz, opportunity for a couple of RBIs with a runner on third and less than two out, failed twice. From a strikeout perspective, the Nationals only struck out six times last night. That wasn't the problem like it was the other night. But here's where I'm going with this. You've probably seen the number. It's been out there. The Nationals, when trailing in the ninth inning or whatever, you know, they haven't won a game. And that obviously is not a good look. But I don't go crazy with those trends because, you know, while you'd like it to be certainly better, you also understand that while they're the number one offense in baseball in terms of runs scored and all that, that just sometimes it doesn't work out in one spot and one number looks bad and all of a sudden you're painted with this team that can't make a comeback. I forget what the number is. It's like 0-30-something. Sorry, I saw it last night and I can't remember what it is and I'm trying to look through my favorites and I just can't find it. Either way, doesn't matter. They haven't won a game. So you kind of thought, oh, they're in trouble now. Down two, they scratched one run back and weren't able to get the second run back. And they blew opportunity, a couple of opportunities, as we mentioned, runners in scoring position, whatnot. And I would say the bigger picture is, besides blowing a 3-0 lead, which again happens, especially in a place like Atlanta, where they are a very good team, and the ball travels well, and you're throwing Jake Irvin, first start in 2 months, I got it all. And we all know what they're not in the bullpen, right? But the bigger problem is, it's not the comebacks in the ninth inning. It's, if we zero out a little bit, and I've mentioned this earlier this week, a couple of times. Last Friday night, 2 runs. This past Monday, in the new series against the Blue Jays and the game that Max starts, 2 runs. Wednesday afternoon, the Nationals with 2 runs. Right? So, while nobody is saying the offense is to fault, because, let's be honest, the offense has carried them. They have 3 games with 2 runs only in 3 of those games in less than a week. In the span of 6 games. 3 out of the 6 with only 2 runs. And I'm not exactly a brain surgeon to tell you this. This team ain't winning any games when it scores 2 runs. 3 games before last night, I should say. 3 games out of 6 on the homestand in which they had 2 runs. They're not winning games 2-1. Sorry, not happening. So last night they got 4 and they had the 3-0 lead. You're kind of hoping, man, God, it's got to hold up. I know 3-0 is not that big of a deal. One swing could change everything, right? I got it. It didn't, but I got it. But the point being is, you finally scratch out some offense after a sluggish week. On the road, you're up 3-0. You got the shot in the arm that you need from Jake Irvin back on the bump for the first time in 2 months. And it looks like you're in pretty good position to take game one of a 4-game weekend set in Atlanta. And then it all falls apart. And again, things happen. It's 1 of 162. But, even when they finally got a little bit more offense than they have in the last week, they still blew a 3-0 lead. They scored 4 runs, and of course, they still didn't walk away with the win. And then they didn't have the extra oomph to get the game-tying run late. And now you say, well, wait a second. What's next? Well, the answer is, could be Foster Griffin's last start. I don't think it'll be C.J. Abrams' last weekend in a Nats uniform. Again, I wouldn't trade either one of them. But at this point, what you have to look at is your 500, your 55-55. Through 110. You have 52 games left. If you trade Foster Griffin before Monday's deadline and say out of the next 7 road games, 3 at Atlanta, 4 at Philly, and Philadelphia's a mess too, But out of the next seven, say you go 2-5, and therefore you're 3-6 on the road trip. Then you're, what, 3 games under 500? And while that's something that you can recover from, you're going to have to get pretty hot and win like 6 out of the next 7 or 6 out of the next 8 to just get back to 500, maybe a game or two over 500 to where you're like in shouting distance of that final wild card spot. And if you trade Foster Griffin, if you trade, say, Luis Garcia, maybe you trade both, maybe you trade one, I don't know. Maybe you only trade Louis. You're not the same team. And then you are trying to climb back the mountain again. And the greatest fear that I had about this season, as fun of a ride as it has been, especially compared to the last six, is what happens when the bats go a little bit cold, which they have over the last week. What happens? Because we know how dreadful the starting pitching outside of Foster Griffin and, for the most part, Cade Cavalli has been. We know how dreadful the bullpen has been. What happens when they stop hitting? Not that they've stopped hitting, but when they don't hit, I should say. When they're not hitting as much as they were. Because they've still had a couple of these games where they've scored 6 or 7 runs. 6-7. But the point being is, if you're going to score 2 runs in a game, which they've done 3 times in the last 6, you're not going to win. They're not built that way. They're not good enough. So they need the offense to carry them. And then even last night, when they were able to get 4 runs and have a 3-0 lead and 3 bombs off the bat in the early innings, it wasn't enough to sustain because they didn't get the extra clutch base hit with runners in scoring position or with 2 out that they needed to maybe salt away the game. So the Nationals lose 5-4. And I think if they are a game or two under 500 on Monday morning, I would probably guess that Foster Griffin's not going to be here. Now, there's conflicting reports. One report says they are talking and I guess making a little bit of progress on a long-term deal. And one, I think it was Mark Feinsand that said, or maybe it was Joel Sherman, I can't remember all these different reports, that said very unlikely and very likely to be traded. So I have no idea where we're at. Bottom line, last night did not help. Bottom line, tonight in Atlanta is essentially, I don't want to say a must win because it's impossible to say that in a 162. But tonight, the Nationals really need to win. And tonight could be Foster Griffin's final time in a Nationals uniform. 12-2, 276 ERA going into tonight's start. And that would be a shame, because that would rob us of a lot of fun over the next 2 months, or a lot of intrigue. All right, just getting rocking and rolling on a Friday night here in the nation's capital. That's how we start. If you want to chime in on the Nationals, go right ahead. But I want to make the turn mostly to the Commanders in football next and start introducing a topic that's a little bit layered, a little bit nuanced, and a little bit maybe kind of difficult to gauge whether it's going to work on Sports Talk Radio or not. But I have faith in you. I have faith in you that you can do this, that you can pull it off. I'll explain to what next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, "Is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar?" I said, "Sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious." He said, "I think that might be it."
for real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, good to have you with us on a Friday afternoon. We got a full house over on the other side of the glass. We got Cowboy Bob, who technically doesn't work for us. He works for Sheehan, the preferred show. Then we have Harold, who goes by many names. And then we have my guy that we're training, welcoming into the show, indoctrinating, what have you, Andrew Olivares. Welcome, officially.
Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate you.
It's good to see you, number one. You reminded me of something before the show that we probably can't talk about on the air, but I totally forgot. That was quite the moment. That was quite the moment, but good to have you aboard with us. Don't listen to anything Harold says because I'm still training him.
Yeah.
And don't listen to anything Cowboy Bob says because he's a Cowboys fan, okay?
I know, right?
Only listen to me because I'm the straw that stirs the drink.
You betcha.
Even though I don't have a drink to stir, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Right. Yes, sir.
Just do that and you'll stay out of trouble.
That sounds
all right. Off to a good start. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980 is the number. All right, so let me set this up, then we'll do the trending alert, then we'll come back and we'll start knocking down your calls. There's been a lot of speculation, talk, what have you. Maybe it's because of what Warren Sharp wrote about and how the New England Patriots have properly surrounded Drake May last year with Stephon Diggs. Then they let Diggs go. They make the trade for A.J. Brown. They sign Romeo Doubs. And the Patriots are coming off of a Super Bowl year. Or making it to the Super Bowl, I should say. And, you know, I would say are the favorites, realistically, in the AFC East, although the Bills will have a lot to say about that. Warren kind of, sort of, took a little shot at Adam Peters and the Commanders. Because his point was, this is how you properly support a young franchise quarterback. And the Commanders, I think, came in 31st in a metric or whatever. I don't have all the numbers in front of me. I'll get them. But the bottom line is, they're not held in the same regard on paper as the New England Patriots and what the Patriots have done to support and surround Drake May. Now, I don't think that's completely fair. Because what the Commanders lack, which is a true special playmaker outside of Terry McLaurin, and we hope that Terry can get back to being a true special playmaker like he was in 2024, what the Commanders lack in terms of a proven, pure playmaker at one of the skill positions, I think they make up for in some way in terms of depth. Meaning they have guys that have talent and can step up and can develop. And maybe it is this year, maybe it's not. But if we're just looking at wide receiver, Treylon Burks, former first round pick. Again, he's banged up right now. It's been a problem. But he had shown all sorts of signs late last year, even day one of camp, offseason, what have you. Antonio Williams, Luke McCaffrey, Jalen Lane. You want to talk about some of the other guys? Okay, fine, whatever. The point being is, okay, Chika Kunkwu, Ben Sinnott, recent second-round pick, going to get better and better. I know it's been frustrating, but he'll get better. Running back room, pretty deep. They add Rashad White. They add Jerome Ford. I don't know if he makes the roster. They brought back Jeremy McNichols. They have Bill. And they draft Catron Allen. And it'll be really interesting to see that dynamic play out. Also, the Commanders have made sure to keep Marcus Mariota, which cost them some money, resource, whatever. and for good reason. On top of that, they went out and they made a big trade that cost them a lot of draft personnel, second and fourth round pick last year, and a third round pick, I think, in April of 25 for Laremy Tunsil. One of the best, three, four best left tackles in the game. They paid Sam Cosmi a deserving and good contract extension, $18 million a year a couple of years ago. They drafted Josh Connerly. They signed first Tyler Biadasz and Nick Allegretti to be their starting center and their left guard. I know Allegretti is not here. I know Biadasz is not here anymore, but he was for 2 years and he started for 2 years. And they drafted Brandon Coleman in the third round. My point being is, yes, the Commanders have not gone out and gotten that absolute slam dunk, no doubt about it, 1A or number two receiver. And that is a fair criticism. They have not found that guy yet. And they struck out on some guys, both that they couldn't sign or that they did choose to sign. Right? Noah Brown ultimately was a strikeout, even though he had one of the biggest moments, if not the biggest moment, in, I don't know, the last 13, 14 years for the franchise. But they got, we think, we hope, we believe, Jaden Daniels right. Had to be. Had to happen. Right? They didn't have the same option that the Patriots had, where the Patriots were able to get Drake May at number three, but also had a number four overall pick this year for Jack Campbell, who we think, if healthy, is going to be a bookend good left tackle. Maybe a franchise guy. Who knows? The point being is, the Commanders didn't exactly have that option. So when I, and I'm just trying to shorten this up for the purposes of the conversation before we turn it over to you. When I look at whether or not AP has properly supported, surrounded, insulated Jaden Daniels over the first 2.5 years, I say it's far from perfect. It's not exactly what you would want, but it is not in any way, shape, or form an embarrassment, a joke, a blunder, a huge gaping mistake, not at all. Because he's taken the team approach. What's the team approach? Again, I'll explain more. And you can chime in at 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. You can chime in next on the Team 980. What letter grade would you give Adam Peters in your eyes for insulating, supporting, surrounding Jaden Daniels over the last 2.5 years? What role, what letter grade, I should say, would you give? I'll tell you mine next after a trending alert right here, right now. All right, the Commanders with a walk. All right, the Commanders with a walkthrough today. Media was not allowed at the facility. Practice again tomorrow at 8:30 in the morning. Fans will be out there for the first time. Meanwhile, Tony Romo has been placed on leave by CBS Sports after last week's OWI incident and arrest in Wisconsin. He received three citations. He had an open container of alcohol, according to reports, and again, now has been put on leave, whatever that means. The network had told a source at Awful announcing earlier this week that Romo would not be getting fired, but they did acknowledge that they have indeed put him on leave. See where that winds up. Meanwhile, from the world of sports gambling and business, the state of New York is suing the company Kalshi for an alleged illegal gambling operation in the state and seeking severe financial penalties against the prediction market company. The New York Attorney General alleging that Kalshi's offered quintessentially gambling and that the prediction market has exposed New Yorkers, including those under 21, to a gambling addiction without adequate safeguards. The Nationals, we opened up with them. They're back at it tonight. A little bit later, 7:15 start against the Braves, 55-55 after blowing last night. They had a 3-0 lead. It is Foster Griffin on the mound. It could be Foster Griffin's last appearance in a Nationals uniform with the trade deadline coming Monday at 6 before his next start. He'll be opposed by Bryce Elder. Check it out, 106.7 The Fan, Odyssey app, and iHeart, and the Nationals radio network, rather. And that's what's trending.
Hey, gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are going to move. We are going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Every time I hear this song, I feel like I should do my worst Jim Rome impersonation. Want to hear it? Clowns, what is up? Grab a vine. Out. No? Cowboy Bob is shaking his head.
That's good.
Andrew,
that's good.
Andrew's nice and laughing. Cowboy Bob is shaking his head. Clowns. Cowboy Bob, what do you know about Jim Rome? Do you even know who Jim Rome is? Of course not. I mean, if you didn't have your head shoved up Jerry Jones's pooper. I'm a little feisty today. Sorry. Just teasing my guy, Cowboy Bob. A, because he's a Cowboys fan. That's just the natural, like, evolution of things on this show. Is everything we say that maybe is not so nice to Cowboy Bob, including calling him Cowboy Bob, is because, well, he's a Cowboys fan. And that has a punishment. There's a price to pay. There really is. There really, really is. There really, really is, you know. Anyway, Adam Peters has been on the job for 2.5 years. I think he has supported Jaden Daniels fine. You can come up with any view, any metric, any ranking, any set of numbers that you want. I got it. He is not. Let's be clear. Let me be clear. He has not found a 1A or 2. He is not at wide receiver, period. But I'm going to ask this question before I give my letter grade. When did it become a law, a rule, that you have to have T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase? Or that you have to have Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams? Or that you have to have, name any other duo, Romeo Doubs and A.J. Brown, or last year, Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, or this year, Devontae Smith and Mekhi Lemon, or whatever. Do you know the Seattle Seahawks? Now, they had a stud in Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Their next guy in terms of yards was like 500 yards. Guys, I always say this. You can, again, come up with any graphic, any set of numbers, all you analytics amigos that you want. Nothing is the same across the board. Everything works differently. Now, the biggest problem, if I'm going to make a comparison of what the Commanders have done or haven't done to the Seahawks, is, duh, they don't have a Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And I understand that. I'm aware of that. Even as good as Terry was 2 years ago, he's not Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Okay? I'm not dumb. But the Seahawks crafted a pretty damn good offense with a bunch of ham spare parts. Even Kenneth Walker wasn't great. He had a great Super Bowl. But he wasn't great. I mean, hell, Zach Charbonnet was basically becoming the main weapon back there until he ended his season with an injury. Yeah, they got a couple of tight ends, a couple of spare parts at receiver. Okay. Nobody's saying that they're bad, but nobody's saying they don't have T. Higgins. And who did I just who's why am I drawing a blank? T. Higgins and the really good receiver that T. Higgins is with. Not A.J. Green. My goodness. You know what I'm talking about. They don't have Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. They don't have Puka Nacua and Devontae Adams. You don't always need that, is the point. They didn't have that in 2024, and they won 12 games, and they had a scintillating offense. Right? So here's the deal. While you could always add more, and you may have to, it is not necessary. It is not a requirement to win. You know what is necessary? What is a requirement is for Jaden Daniels to stay on the field and Jaden Daniels to see the field without always having to run like he did in 2024. That's what's necessary. I promise you, if that happens, they're going to win. I mean, they could have Tom, Dick, and Harry. That's an old man reference if you've ever heard one. At wide receiver. And they basically did in 2024 with Zacchaeus, De'Ami Brown, and Jamison Crowder. And then they decided to let all three of them go. There was one radio show, one, that called them out for that and said, hey, man, that's going to come back and hurt you. And sure as you know what, it did. Now they've got De'Ami back. Of course, the other two are gone. But they've added Antonio Williams. They've added Jalen Lane. Luke McCaffrey is in year three. They've added Treylon Burks. I think the Commanders are going to be better than you think, but could you add someone of a certain veteran pedigree? Absolutely. Would not hurt. I would encourage it. I've encouraged it all offseason, but it's not a necessary deal to win games. I give Adam Peters a B. He is dramatically fortified, upgraded the offensive line. They now have quality depth, I believe, at tight end, running back, and I believe they have pretty decent, if not quality, depth at wide receiver. It could use an upgrade, but it is not this sight for sore eyes that people are trying to make it. Sorry, it's not. Could they use an upgrade? Yes. But it's not a sight for sore eyes. I believe Adam Peters has built the offense and supported and insulated Jaden Daniels in a different way than the analytics amigos, the number nerds, and the fantasy geeks want him to. Not every team has T. Higgins and, I'm forgetting his name again.
Ja'Marr Chase.
Thank you, Ja'Marr Chase. Why do I want to say A.J. Green? A.J. Green used to be the Bengals' number one receiver.
Right.
God almighty.
He was great back in the day.
Yeah, but Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, right, under Jay Gruden. Yep. Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Not every team has that. Not every team has Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams. Not every team has A.J. Brown and Romeo Dobbs. The Green Bay Packers had like four or five jabronis that they would just throw out there and everybody would get like 25 passes. And they were fine because they could run the ball. They had a pretty good offensive line. They had a good mobile quarterback. They had a good defense. You can't build teams the same way across the board all the time. And I would argue that the way the Bengals have done it is not the right way. Now, have they made improvements this year? Yes. Dexter Lawrence and some others. And they did. I mean, they lost Trey Hendrickson, but, you know, they have some other pieces. But my point being is, it's really hard when you solely focus on wide receivers or skill talent to have a good to very good offensive line, and the Commanders' offensive line is not great. It's good to very good. And if you're going to make an argument, that's your argument. They prioritized offensive line, and it's not lights out. It's not. That's your argument. It's a better argument, I think, than, oh, they haven't gotten their T. Higgins. Or, well, there's a couple of other examples, like the crew down in Dallas that I haven't mentioned. Or maybe even Pittsburgh. Or what they were trying to do in Indianapolis. I'll get to all of that coming up. On the Team 980, 301-230-0980, I think Adam Peters gets a B letter grade for how he has supported, insulated, protected Jaden Daniels over the last 2.5 years. What say you? 301-230-0980 on the Team 980, the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. All right, wrapping up hour number one. We'll get out to your calls actually after 2 o'clock. So hang in there, Mark and Largo. The Mark and Largo Show will start us off in just a couple of minutes. Let me just point this out. Not every team has what the Cowboys have with George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb. Now, they ain't going to have it for long. This is probably George Pickens' last year in Dallas. Pittsburgh tried to have George Pickens, and they tried to do a couple of different things, and then they decided George Pickens was too much of a pain in the ass, and they subbed him out for DK Metcalf. And then they acquired Michael Pittman over the offseason from Indianapolis, because Indianapolis gave up Pittman because they committed, overcommitted, to Alec Pierce. Not every team has what the Vikings have, what the Cowboys have, what the Bengals have, what the Patriots have, what the Rams have. Not every team. Now, you could argue that a bunch of those teams that I just mentioned are really good. I would argue that a couple of them are. The Rams are, the Patriots are, and they were terrible up until this year, and the Vikings are. The Cowboys aren't yet. The Bengals aren't yet. Like you, and what are the arguments for those teams that I just mentioned that aren't there yet? Well, their defenses suck, the Bengals, the Cowboys. So they finally figured out, oh, we got to spend some resources that way. See, like, I don't like everything that Adam Peters has done. I don't agree with everything. But what Adam Peters has done is tried to build a roster. He's made some errors in judgment. Some things haven't worked out, injury-wise, performance-wise, whatever. But I do believe the Commanders have a fairly balanced roster. I don't think they have, like, this major eyesore weakness anywhere anymore. You could argue last year they did. But there's some reasons for why the defense was so bad. And I guess why the wide receiver group was so bad. Anything can blow up because of injury. But on paper, when you're making decisions in the offseason, on paper, I don't look at Adam Peters and go, my God, what is he doing? How could he not improve this area of the roster? I don't look at it that way. And you shouldn't either. I give him a B. Maybe I could be talked into a B-plus for how he has surrounded, insulated Jaden Daniels. I don't give a rat's ass about analytics and number nerds and fantasy numbers. I care about winning football games. It worked great in 2024. It worked terribly in 2025. They didn't have great talent in 2024. I promise you that. On the Team 980, the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn, we wrap up hour number one. Hour number two, straight ahead. Stay with us.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.